Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 549 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am Kevin Huntsberger, joined this week by Chad Smart, and we are kind of on the, I don't want to say buzz or a hangover of Saturday night's main event, but kind of inspired by the weekend show. And Chad, I know we probably view it differently, literally and figuratively, but I got to tell you, the one thing I would change about Saturday night's main event to make it stand out even more so. What's that?
The day.
Yeah. Run it on Tuesdays. I'm not a fan of how they started off, how they start off Raw, and I don't have cable, so I don't watch SmackDown. I don't know if they do the little walking voiceover thing on all the shows now. I would go back to, like we talked about before, when they debuted or redebuted in January and do, or in December, I guess, of last year, and do the open like they used to, with the quick little promos and the funny graphics behind them, to really knock us over the head with the nostalgia. But what do you think?
Oh, I'm with you. And that's something I don't understand, why they don't do that. Because the whole point of bringing back Saturday Night's Main Event and using the theme song and the old clips in the intro is for the nostalgia. And they even talk about how they bring the modern product and infuse it with the nostalgia.
Yeah.
And so it's like those promos were what gave Saturday Night's Main Event their own little, uniqueness. And also, you make a logo for a wrestler, slap it on a green screen behind them, merchandise, you can sell that on a t-shirt or a koozie or neck tattoos, whatever you want. I also am not a fan of starting with Joe Testatore, am I saying his last name right? And Jesse Ventura talking about the show either. Like, that just, to me, eats into time that is already being eaten up by the 2,700 commercials that are going to show up during the show.
That would be, if I had another complaint, it would definitely be the number of commercials, which I guess you don't get to set all kinds of records if you don't have all kinds of commercials to pay for that.
That's why I'm glad I watched it on Peacock afterwards. Hour and a half, done. Actually, quicker than that, because there were a few promo, WWE Shop Zone and SummerSlam promos that you could fast forward through.
Do you like the concept of it being on in prime time and basically simulcast with Peacock and NBC, or do you wish that it was, true to its original origin and coming on at here in the Central Time Zone at 10:30 Central, literally preempting Saturday night's or Saturday Night Live?
I mean, it's amusing that they use the Saturday Night Live will not be seen tonight in its place, open for the show that technically isn't replacing Saturday Night Live. I mean, I'm old, so I actually did watch it more in the 10:30 time slot afterwards. Yeah. But no, I think if you're trying to get the most eyeballs, the prime time slot is, and looking at the state of television right now, I think sporting events are more live watched than regular television, scripted scripted or reality, but that's also scripted. So, I think it makes sense. It's not like NBC is preempting the Golden Girls to throw on.
Yeah. And that was my other question for you, and I don't know if you even know the answer, but what is usually on? I mean, I don't I rarely turn the TV on anymore unless it is to stream something. So what is typically on NBC on Saturday nights?
I mean,
is it preempting?
Here in the West Coast, when Saturday Night Live, actually, when, I think they simulcast Saturday Night Live live now, which they started doing, I think, right after COVID.
Oh, okay.
Because before it would be, you know, on the normal time, it would just be delayed mm-hmm. until the normal time. But now they do it live on, coast to coast. And I think that's because of the, you know, the popularity of streaming and just, you know, the digital platform. Like if you don't stream it live, someone's going to record it and put it up online anyway. So people are going to watch it there.
Yeah.
So I think they would show like an old episode of Saturday Night Live and then the new episode. Okay.
Gotcha.
But again, I don't watch regular television enough to know what is on, which is why I got surprised here in the last month with all the finales. And like I watched one and like, oh, that was a two-part episode, but I only saw the last one because I didn't realize it was a two-parter. Yeah. Because I don't watch commercials and they don't promote this online as much. So
how do you feel like, you know, I feel like obviously the Monday Night War era changed television for or wrestling to on TV, where we don't, unless they're really trying to establish a monster heel type character, we don't really get the squash matches anymore. And you know, in
unless
the
you
old
watch
days,
Collision,
what's that?
So unless you watch AEW Collision,
yeah. I figured they still do some of the squash stuff, don't they?
Yeah. Yes.
But you know, with WWE, especially with Saturday Night's Main Event, I mean, I can remember back in the day, you know, they always started off because, like we said, it's late. It's 10:30 here in the Central Time Zone and 11:30 on the East Coast. So you would get Hulk Hogan or the Ultimate Warrior or Randy Savage or whomever in those, you know, first 30 or so minutes of the show. And then usually at the end, it was Coco Beware or the Brooklyn Brawler or somebody along those lines. Last night or Saturday night, as we were watching, it was, you know, five PLE or Raw or SmackDown quality matches, if you will, in terms of the star power. You know, we had Chelsea Green and Zelina Vega, CM Punk was there. You know, we saw the stars, if you will. Do you think that helps or hinders the overall trying to differentiate, but we're still seeing a Saturday Night's Main Event kind of being that? Because back in the day, you know, we got the squash matches on Saturday or Sunday afternoons, and then once a quarter of a pay-per-view, there was no big, you know, deal. I think that they've done a good job of keeping Saturday Night's Main Event, to me at least, special and kind of keeping storylines going, but also giving us that dose of nostalgia.
Yeah. Well, and I would also throw in, you know, going back to our comment earlier about the opening promos, you know, one of the other staples of Saturday Night Live was like the skits, ongoing skits in the show or the theme. Like,
Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yeah. What did I say?
Saturday Night Live.
Well, they also try to have skits throughout
they
the show,
do
but
skits
not as entertaining. but Saturday Night's Main Event is the, you know, like the Uncle Elmer's wedding stuff or the Halloween episodes or, you know. And I think that's missing from the Saturday Night Main Event now as well. And that's a way to also showcase other talent that's not on the show. And, you know, especially I think the purpose of Saturday Night's Main Event is to try to get the casual viewer, people who may not, you know, be the diehard who is either lapsed or hasn't seen wrestling or turns in, you know, and you want to showcase as much as you can. So I think in that regard, that's why they also don't do the squash matches, because you want to have something competitive.
Would you do the legend introductions? Would you instead incorporate them into a backstage skit?
Sure. I mean, and that's the thing is, you know, sadly, and I don't hope this doesn't sound as bad as it does in my head right now, but
it will.
You know, it will. But, you know, like last on this episode, they had Leilani Kai. How many people besides the diehards that have been watching since the 80s know who Leilani Kai is? You know, it's one thing to have like a Hogan, a Savage. I'm trying to think of people that are still alive and welcomed by the fans to be on the show. But then it's also, you know, these people that haven't been on TV in 30 years. And so, I mean, again, I don't want them to erase those people. I, you know, obviously Leilani Kai has important history with WWE, but is somebody going to tune in and be like, oh, Leilani Kai, you know, I'm going to go back and watch her match. I don't.
Right.
I don't know. So yeah, I think it, again, it's star power is what you're looking for.
It's star power. I agree. And I, you know, not that I feel the need to defend Leilani Kai, but
no.
I know that she's active on social media and has been doing a lot on the convention circuit, if you will, the WrestleCon circuits and whatnot. So I think part of it is just, yeah, given some of these past stars and you know, I noticed they introduced her, obviously she's not in the Hall of Fame. Tatanka was there this past weekend too. He's not in the Hall of Fame. So I wonder if they, like you said, are they running low on, you know, because we had Ted DiBiase and Greg Valentine and Sergeant Slaughter, Tito Santana, you know, all those guys. So that I like that they bring back some of that quick little hint of nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo were there in their U.S. Express jackets, which is a little weird. It is kind of weird, you know, because Barry Windham had multiple characters in WWE. Mm-hmm. But then also, you know, even in the WCW, NWA, when he was in the Horsemen, a much different character than what he was when he was U.S. Express Barry Windham. And Mike Rotundo, we obviously know, was IRS. And I think is probably more closely associated with that character. You know, if you look at Windham and Rotundo as a tag team, they were only together maybe 2 years, if even, in the WWF. But yet, that was kind of the route they went, instead of having Rotundo there dressed as IRS and Barry Windham maybe just not as Blackjack Windham, but just, you know, right, doing the Barry Windham gimmick. So I thought that was interesting that they were, yeah, they were still kind of toting that U.S. Express line, if you will.
Well, maybe they have new action figures coming out. They want to promote them. So. Mm.
Good point. Good point. One other thing I did notice, and I don't know, I guess I don't pay enough attention to Raw, and help me here. The ring, it just had the Saturday Night's Main Event logo. There was no other branding or advertising mm-hmm. going on there. Obviously, the big Prime bottle was sitting outside the ring while the Paul was there. So does Raw have the ring all decked up like it does for PLEs, or do you remember?
I think so, but I, you know, it's one of those things that I know online gets a lot of comments and hates on, and it's one of those things that I don't pay attention to because I'm like, yeah, it's a ring. I'm more focused on what's going on the ring than what's actually on the ring.
Yeah. Let's talk about something you said earlier too. You're not a fan of the Joe Testator, I think we're saying his name right, but I'm not 100% sure, and Jesse Ventura kind of opening the show. Why, you said it takes some of the time, but is there anything else? Because to me, it feels like with Jesse these days, it's almost like you're walking on eggshells or you're waiting for him to say, like, I'm just wondering, I can't imagine this happening in the Vince McMahon era. And I just wonder if they put any kind of stipulations or, you know, anything with him when he's out there, because there were some times during the broadcast that I kind of cringed as he was going on. Because sometimes it does sound like, you know, old man yelling at clouds.
Which we know all about. So
exactly.
We can talk about that. I think, you know, you mentioned how they do the opening with everyone walking in and kind of going up like, you know, oh, here's Jey Uso. He's walking in. He's going to face Logan Paul. Here's Logan Paul. He's going to. And so I think when you go to Joe and Jesse, it's kind of just a rehash of what you've already said in the opening.
Yeah.
So it's like, and, you know, I'm trying to remember back to the original Saturday Night's Main Event. Cause I know, I believe they would start with Jesse and Vince talking, you know, in front of the green screen, which took me way too long to realize they weren't actually in the arena. But yeah, it's just, and I think part of it is Jesse himself. And, you know, I don't know how much he watches the current product to know what's going on. And yeah, he's just, I don't know. There's just something about him now. And I don't know if it's the old man aspect or the hasn't been involved with wrestling in the last 30 years. And he's trying to be what he was, but wrestling has moved on. And so now he just seems out of place. Because, you know, later on in the show, when they brought him out to do commentary during the steel cage match, I actually hit the mute button and was watching the YouTube video during the match because I didn't want to listen to Jesse. Cause it was just that old man. It just took, I mean, I'm not a fan of WWE commentary to begin with. And Jesse just pushed me over the top of not wanting to hear it, especially. And I saw someone made a comment like, did Jesse know that Logan Paul and Jake Paul are two different people, or does he just not care? Because he made a comment about Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Who fought Jake, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely different. And then, you know, he kind of went on and on about
real quick.
Because
this just popped in my mind. I don't want to lose it again. So at the beginning of the cage match, they played a clip from an old Saturday Night's Main Event where Jesse teamed with Piper and I think Orndorff.
Piper and Orton.
Orton taking on the Hillbillies. One, I didn't remember that match. But, you know, then Jesse started going off on Pat McAfee because he's like, I'm the only person that's gone from commentary and came back. And I'm like, what are you complaining about? Like, it didn't, because the way he said it, and again, I don't remember the show. So I don't know if Jesse like started on commentary, then they did the match, and then he came back and did commentary. You know, they would do the commentary post-show and wrap around.
Yeah.
Because it isn't like McAfee got up like they did at the Royal Rumble a few years ago where all the announcers got in and then came back, which, again, he didn't bring that up. And that was, I guess, another instance of commentators going to wrestle and coming back. But, yeah, his whole going off on McAfee for wrestling and then commentating just – again, it's like one of those things where it's like, is he just being an old man going off on a tangent?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird too. And I remember that match, but I don't remember the particulars of. I almost feel like I'll go back and look at that show. I think Bobby Heenan may have made his Saturday Night's Main Event debut on commentary for that show, or at least when Jesse was wrestling. I don't remember. Like I said, all the specifics of it, but I thought that was a little weird too. And then, he made a comment right after Michael Cole talked about Hogan and Boss Man and Hogan and Orndorff, probably maybe the only two other steel cage matches on Saturday Night's Main Event, but definitely the two of the most famous cage matches in WWE history. And that's kind of what we're going to talk more about is cage matches here in general, kind of tying off of what Jesse said, but Cole talks about those, and then Jesse said something about, back in the 80s, this wouldn't have happened. NBC wouldn't have allowed these two in a cage. And I thought that's kind of weird because Michael Cole literally just talked about the two other cage matches. But then I saw some people online defending it. Maybe this does make sense. They interpreted what Jesse said as the feud between Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre is so violent that it wouldn't have been allowed on TV back in the 80s. I don't know. It was kind of weird. And Cole just kind of left it alone and didn't say, well, hey, I just said all of this. So
yeah,
I don't know if we had muted it by then.
No, I heard that, but I took it more as in prime time. It wouldn't have been allowed in prime time. You know, maybe a late night.
Okay.
It would have been okay. But, and we'll get, I'll talk more about Hogan cage matches when we get into the topic. But I think there's a difference between the match last night and the other matches. Which, by the way, just jumping ahead, I really wish they would have tried to recreate the Orndorff Hogan ending for the Damian Priest Drew McIntyre match, but yeah.
I think that's going to come. We're going to talk about cage matches in just a minute. Two other things I want to bring up to you.
Yeah.
I know you're going to be contrary to this, so that's why we're going to debate it now. I liked the way they were. I didn't expect R-Truth to win, but I like the whole Ron Cena and kind of playing off of that.
Yeah.
I guess if there was a squash match last night or Saturday night, that would have been it. You know, I think most of us didn't expect R-Truth to win, but they gave us some hope throughout the course of the match. But I like how they played it off. And I thought Cody was going to return during the course of that match. I like the fact that they had Cena and Jey Uso kind of confront each other backstage and then planted seeds for later in the show, because I thought there's no way Logan Paul is going to win the championship. But then after that whole little thing, I thought, wow, now I'm questioning this. This could happen. This could happen. And obviously it didn't. Cody returns, and now we've got set up for Money in the Bank, which is in your hometown next week, or in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks,
I'm sure you'll be there. The tag match with Uso, Jey Uso, and Cody against John Cena and Logan Paul. So I like how we got there. I don't necessarily, I'm not, you know, I don't mean different, I guess, about the match, but do you think this is going to eventually lead to John Cena's face turn, or is he going to end this year on Saturday night's main event in December, allegedly, with the belt and walk away as the bad guy still?
I mean, common sense says he has to turn face. You want to send him out on a high note.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the promo last night, it's not that I felt the promo was bad. I just felt like they skipped steps one and two and went directly to step three and four. It's like, because Cena's not there on a weekly basis, you don't get a real build up. And Money in the Bank, like you said, is 2 weeks away. And yeah, other than, I mean, they haven't even officially announced all the participants for the Money in the Bank, and there's nothing else announced for the show. And I mean, there could be a whole nother topic of ticket prices, which we've talked about before, and not knowing what you're buying when you buy your ticket. But I feel like this was needed to, because money, obviously Money in the Bank, the Money in the Bank matches are going to be the selling point and everything else. You know, it's kind of like the Royal Rumble, where they usually throw a title match to somebody who normally wouldn't receive a title match.
Yeah.
It just came to me kind of, now as a thought, is like, depending on how they lay out the show, because sometimes they do the Money in the Bank last, in which case it takes away the intrigue of a possible cash in, but now you have both champions in a tag match. If you do the men's Money in the Bank match earlier in the night, could we see a cash in? Obviously, I don't think you're going to get a cash in on Cena, but I don't know. We'll see if that works, how that plays out. But I don't know, this whole Cena heel turn, just with each appearance he makes, it gets less and less interesting for me. Instead of trying to sell the "I'm going to ruin wrestling," you know, we talked about it a few weeks ago, where I'm just not buying into that character. Like, yeah, Cena, I don't believe Cena.
Right.
It's okay. It's just it's not coming across as authentic of "I'm wanting to ruin wrestling." You know, I want to kill, and it's like, I still don't know why. And I know he's, you know, did cut his promo on the fans and has said things that are true with the way the fans reacted, but you know, that went on for 10 years and it never bothered Cena. And now all of a sudden he comes back for his retirement and he's like, okay, now I'm going to be bad guy. And I don't know. I just don't buy it. And the tag match itself doesn't interest me. Cody coming back doesn't interest me to face Cena again, because I'm not a big fan of like the, you know, automatic rematches or lingering. And I think this is a bigger issue with WWE booking, where feuds get drug out for multiple matches, multiple months. Case in point, Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre, where it's just like, okay, give me something new. Don't just keep rehashing the same thing. That said, there.
Yeah, it makes sense, and I can see that, and I am curious to see though where they go from here with Cena going into SummerSlam, Survivor Series. You know, I mean, we're almost halfway through the year, so Yeah. And those appearances are dwindling. I don't know where we're at now on the,
I think 23
meter, but yeah, it'll be over before you know it. So we'll keep an eye on that and look at potential final opponents and all that as we get closer to the countdown. But yeah, I guess one of the rumors I saw was that it was going to be Punk and Cena at Monday.
And I've also seen six man with the Usos and Cody versus Cena, Logan Paul, and Rookie of the Year, Travis Scott.
Well, I'm glad we're not getting that. So.
We still got 2 weeks to go.
At least not yet. So.
Yeah.
So we are going to talk more about cage matches. And ironically enough, this, because I wanted to just mention it because it's part of the whole cage match mentality. And as this podcast drops on the 25th of May, it is the 7 years. I can't do that. Anyway, 7 years ago, that Stride Pro Wrestling did an all steel cage match show. And I know that.
Terrible idea.
Well, and I want to talk about that. I know in the past, TNA, Impact Wrestling did. I don't know. Do they still do locked in?
I don't know if they still do it, but they don't do it all cage matches.
I think from an indie perspective, and I'm going to put on my, you know, this was not a, it was a Stride show, but it was also promoted at a different venue, in a different place. And they've gotten a steel cage and they've wanted to do something with the cage throughout the night. I don't know if that part of it was, you know, cost of the cage and having it so they might as well use it. But I think a lot of it is at an indie show. And I think, I don't remember if you were at the show where we did the cage match with All American Pro Wrestling, but like how much time that took to set up for just that one match. And so I think part of it is convenience of just setting it up. And, you know, at an indie show, there's not a whole lot of other things to do other than sit there and wait for the crew to put up the cage. So I think it's out of partly necessity of, okay, we've got it up and we're just leaving it up. I was part of that show with Roger Mathis and in the cage and a whole different kind of feel and vibe. But anyway, do you think you're not a fan of the all cage match shows?
No, I'm not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view where you have multiple Hell in a Cell matches. It just, to me, it diminishes the point of the match. Like that, it, you know, a cage match should be a either the end or near the end of a big feud. It shouldn't just be, let's throw some random guys into a cage and have them fight.
And I feel like Saturday Night's Main Event that we just saw, Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest, because they kind of kept alluding to that. Like, this is going to settle this feud. I'm curious if this one is now officially over. So I agree. You know, the cage comes, it is the conclusion of typically a feud where you keep out the interference. The first cage match I remember seeing is the match that kind of hooked me as a fan. That was Kerry Von Erich and Ric Flair. And we know that they had several matches after that. I think sometimes the cage was just used as window dressing or as an attraction. Another cage I remember very vividly as a kid was Tito Santana and Greg Valentine when Tito won the Intercontinental Championship back. And WWF's cage matches, and this is what we're going to get into the conversation, were different from other companies because you could escape the cage. And I remember that Tito-Greg Valentine match where Greg was trying to go out the door, Tito was going over the top, he kicked the cage door shut on Greg Valentine and ended up dropping to the floor and winning as a result. Jesse brought up a good point where Damian Priest won the cage match by simply exiting through the door. And we were trying before we started recording, we were talking about this. And what is your thought, Juan, on, because I know you were more of a JCP guy back in the day, and there were lots of great bloody gory cage matches in that era where you had to make your opponent submit or pin them. There was no escaping the cage. What are your thoughts on the escape from the cage versus beating your opponent inside the cage?
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat kind of funny for my own personal taste, because I, for the longest time as a kid, I liked the Escape the Cage match better than the pin or submit, just because I thought it added a different value to the match. And that, maybe it's because I saw more WWE matches, cage matches, than I did JCP, because I don't know why. I guess maybe because if they were on, I guess they were on house shows more often than, you know, you would get on Saturday night. And so since I was watching I would watch the Madison Square Garden and the Boston Garden shows on a monthly. And I remember a promo for a match like the next month when it was going to be the Dream Team versus the Bulldogs in a cage. And the Bulldogs are standing behind the chain link fence, and they got a head of lettuce, and they're like scraping the lettuce across the cage to show how deadly it was. Like, that as a kid, I was like, oh my gosh, that's mean. But yeah, I don't know. There was a part of me, and maybe it's also in the video games. That was the whole point. You know, I had the Sega CD Rage in the Cage, which was a terrible wrestling game, but the whole point was to get out of the cage. So maybe that just psychologically, that's the way that I thought about cage matches. But now, I think pinning is the better, more finalizing, which isn't a word, but finalizing way to win the match, whereas escaping can be kind of the coward's way out. Although, you know, I also think they have, it depends on how you set up the escape. You know, we talked earlier off air, I still think in the Superfly Snuka Don Morocco match, I think Superfly headbutted Morocco and he ended up falling out of the cage. I remember, I think it was X-Pac and maybe Kane when they were fighting in a cage, and X-Pac was climbing down and Kane kicked the door open and X-Pac came down and crotched himself on the door. And then he allowed Kane to come in. You know, I think if you can do something clever, we mentioned, you know, Big Show throwing Steve Austin onto the side of the cage and the cage opening up, helping. So I think if you can make the escape interesting, that's fine. But yeah.
Does AEW, and not that we need to compare, but does AEW, when they do cage matches, is it pinfall or submission, or do they do the escape?
I think they do pinfall. I mean, they just did one a couple weeks ago and it was pinfall.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I don't know if you want to get into it now or save it for later on in the show. Chain link fence versus the Big Blue.
Actually, that was next on my list. So yeah, okay. I was a little surprised they didn't, you know, because again, we talked earlier about the nostalgia of Saturday night's main event, that they didn't do Big Blue for Damian Priest and McIntyre. So, you know, the cage that we had at the Stride show for the indie show was a Big Blue style cage. It wasn't blue, it was black. I've been to other indie shows though, where they use the chain. I think the chain link fence is more intimidating, but I can tell you from being in there and doing it, the bars to climb on, it's a hell of a lot easier. I think Big Blue got a lot of criticism back in the day because it was different, but I think now fans like it for, again, like I said, those nostalgic purposes. So I'm a little indifferent to it. I don't think it's as, you can't shred that head of lettuce like you did with the steel cage, but I think it kind of served its purpose in being there as an attraction. I probably can't see it if you're watching. They're behind me though, inside my display cases, Big Blue. So from a toy perspective too, it was a lot easier to use that than laundry basket, which is what I used for steel cage matches before Big Blue. So what about you?
I detest Big Blue. I put it in correlation with Hulk Hogan. And I figure the only reason that it was used was so it was easier for Hogan to climb the cage. I couldn't see him climbing a chain link fence. And it just doesn't look, I mean, I get that it doesn't have the give that a chain link fence has, but you know, with the gaps between the bars, it just doesn't feel like if you throw someone into it, they're not hitting as much. And so it doesn't have that feel of danger as much as the chain link. So visually, which is, you know, again, psychological, I'm sure the bars don't feel, because they're not made of chocolate, so I'm sure they're not that good. But yeah, it just, the Big Blue just seemed like it made it too easy to climb. So,
well, and you mentioned visually. I mean, I wonder if that helps from the audience perspective.
His perspective.
Can you see better? Mm-hmm. I know a lot of times they'll have a camera person inside the cage, but yeah, if you're in the crowd watching, I would imagine, and I'm trying to think back, other than a couple of indie shows, I don't know if we ever saw any chain link versions. I mean, obviously, Hell in a Cell back in the day. Mm-hmm. That bad boy in St. Louis, and then Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania 31. But I just wonder if it is more visually appealing for the fan and the crowd to see. Maybe. Into it.
Yeah, the further away you are.
I think, what's that?
The further away you are, yeah, I'm sure it's easier to see.
I do think you're right, though, about, because I'm trying to remember back, if, like, when Big Blue made its debut, was it a Hulk Hogan cage match? We saw several iconic ones on Saturday Night's Main Event that featured Hogan. And the Escape, the Great Escape, with climbing over the top with him and Paul Orndorff. And then years later, the Superflex, Big Boss Man. I'm trying to remember if Hogan climbed out of that one or if he walked through the door to Escape. I can't remember, but I'm sure someone will let us know. But so you think the Escape is more, if it's more cleverly done or there's some thought into it, mm-hmm, or going over the top? Because that was the big thing Jesse just ranted on Saturday Night's Main Event about, how Damian Priest took the easy way out, said, why didn't the chauffeur, you know, pick him up at the door? You know, just going on and on. And it, at that point, it did sound like old man. I didn't think it was that bad, but I do think that for as intense as they tried to sell this feud, it ended rather anticlimactically with, you know, Priest incapacitating Drew and then just closing on the door.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree a little bit, because I think the fact that he gave Drew the concerto and left Drew laying on the mat, and then he kind of walked out. But I mean, he paused for a second to look back and then left. I think it was a defining win. Whereas, again, if he had just, you know, fell out of the door, like if Drew had given him the claymore and knocked him out of the ring, I think that would have been a cheaper victory. Whereas this was, to me, was more definitive, because I saw I think they brought the stretcher out to check on Drew. I had another comment I was going to make about Katie. With speaking of escaping, though, you know, obviously with the advancement in technology and setups, you know, like you said, at indie shows, you have to take the time to set the cage up piece by piece. You know, now the major shows have it already constructed, hanging from the ceiling, and it comes down. And so there's a wider platform around the top of the cage. Obviously, people do more moves from the top of the cage now, you know, these days. How does that affect your feeling of an escape, or even just a cage match itself? Do you think that the platforms make it too easy to climb to the top? Do you think it makes the expectations of a top of the cage move? You know, we see in the War Games WWE style that don't have a roof, which, whole nother old man yelling at clouds rant that we can go on. But, you know, you always see people climbing up. Io Sky always puts the trash can over her head and jumps off, and Michael Cole sells it like it's the first time he's ever seen it, much like Cena giving Big Show the AA 28 times and Michael Cole always being impressed. But do you feel like that, does that cheapen a cage match?
I do have another point about Drew and Daniel.
Okay.
I'll talk about that in a minute, but no, I don't think it cheapens it, because I do think there's a certain sector of the audience that, you know, it comes to expect this, and we want to see, you know, I think McFoley and The Undertaker set the bar way too high in the second Hell in a Cell. No one has ever been able to exceed that, in my opinion, as far as the shock value. Mm-hmm. And so I think that fans just become almost to the point where they immune to the violence and the brutality. You know, we talked about Sabu last week with his last match and the barbed wire and all of that. You know, you see fans complain when they're like, oh, clearly he landed on a crash pad when he fell through, you know, and it's like, well, no crap. You know, do you want these guys to really legitimately get hurt or put their lives or their livelihoods in danger? I mean, so no, I don't mind it being there. Again, though, I get kind of cringy. You know, I'm to the point now where if it goes where you see somebody climb to the top or you see where it's headed, and I worry more nowadays than I did before about that margin of error, where if they're just a little bit off, someone's going to get hurt. And I don't want to see that happen. You know, I have a friend who sends me, you don't do it very much, but I have another friend who, and I'm not going to say who it is, but he'll send me clips all the time of people like getting hurt in the ring, you know, almost like that Sid-esque
No.
leg break. I don't even like when I see it. And I kind of, I'm like, okay, I know what's going to happen. I'm not going to watch it. I just don't want to see it. I don't like it at all. So,
Yeah, I just send you the ones that have stupid people doing stupid stuff in their ring.
yeah. But yeah, I think that, you know, giving them a little extra safety at the top, it doesn't bother me. Because again, I don't expect, who was it? Elix Skipper that scaled the cage in TNA back in the day and did the kind of
Ran.
Hurricanrana off the top or whatever it was. I mean, kudos to those guys, but man, one wrong. I mean, I posted a video on Instagram the other day. I tripped over the little 3 foot tall, or probably not even 3 foot tall, little gate I have outside in my backyard. It was on surveillance video. And so I can't imagine getting up and doing something like that 20, 15, 20 feet, probably gorilla, I'm assuming that, but you know, that high up in the arena. So yeah, give them a little extra safety, and I'm fine with that because they are literally working without a man. So I don't have a problem.
Yeah, I don't. I'm just making conversation, but
But back to Drew and Damian, and you know, you talk about the way Damian walked out. I think that would have worked for me more if Drew, or I'm sorry, if Damian had been more of the, I feel like we could do another match because Drew had won so many times before. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there was not a, it wasn't a, in my opinion at least, I didn't feel like it was a seesaw back and forth. I guess Damian did get the upper hand, beating him at WrestleMania last year with the Money in the Bank cash in. And then Drew got his comeuppance at this year's WrestleMania. But I don't know. To me, it felt like Damian Priest felt lesser than in this. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm looking at this from a different set of eyes.
I mean, again, I didn't fully pay attention to the cage match, so I don't really have an informed opinion of how dominant the victory was, if it made, I just remember the ending with Drew being laid out. We've talked about it before. I'm still not fully sold on Damian Priest. I mean, I think I'm more sold on him now than when he became champion. Like, I think they've done decent, but he still doesn't. I'm still not excited when I see Damian Priest announced for a match. So, whereas Drew McIntyre, I am. So maybe it's just the fan of me being disappointed that Damian won.
That's
But
fair. I can see that. I agree. But, you know, obviously that was, you know, kind of that old school cage match that we saw. There were no, you know, extra stipulations. There were no chair. Well, I guess at the end we saw the chairs, but you know, we didn't have Hell in a Cell style, or there was not any, it was a basic cage match, which I thought served its purpose and worked for what it was. And again, I don't think as fans we need. I think there was an era there where it did feel like the previous match, previous cage match, previous ladder match, previous insert whatever stipulation match had to eclipse the first, you know. And
previous.
I feel better as a fan knowing that they don't have to go out there and steal the show every time. They, you know, they should obviously want to go out there and perform well, but if they tell a good story, I don't need to see a lot of high risk or death-defying moves out there. Just entertain me and tell the story and move on to wrestle another day. So, and maybe that's part of the old man too, where I would rather come back and watch them next week or next month than, you know, Bronson Reed. We didn't talk about that, but he's obviously back now and has joined the Paul Heyman stable.
Yeah, speaking of dangerous, you know, broke both ankles diving off the top of the cage.
Yeah, and I believe that was the last time we saw him. And it wrestled, was it Survivor Series War Games?
Yeah.
And like I said, he broke both of his ankles doing something like that. And, you know, again, it wasn't necessary. And I'm sure he went into that move knowing there's a potential for injury here. And whether he knew he was going to be out for 6 months, I don't know. But sometimes I feel like you've got to weigh that reward risk ratio. You know, being gone that long, did him coming back. And again, he's another one of those guys that I kind of put in that Damian Priest league where he's just kind of there for me. And not knocking him or criticizing him and appreciate the fact that he did what he did. But I was a little let down that he's the third man, if you will, of this modern day, what some are calling Dangerous Alliance or NWO or whatever. Faction. It can't just be this new faction. It's got to be a reincarnation of something that's important to the American wrestling.
Yeah, I am not a Bronson Reed fan yet. I mean, who knows how they'll do, but I mean, it was a surprise. I didn't expect him back this soon, and there are no, you know, online spoilers before his return.
Yeah, that was good.
You know, and I think it's one of those things where I think a lot of people expected Sami Zayn to turn.
And that's, yes, I was one of them.
Yeah. And I think this is a better, you know, instead of getting yourself set up for disappointment, like this was a better surprise in that regard where the quote unquote obvious didn't happen.
Right.
But the surprise was better than just a Russo shock moment. You know, because to negate the expected. But yeah, we'll see how he's used, what they do going forward. I mean, really out of that group, Bron Breakker is the only one that I'm really interested to see in the ring. I think Seth is, because he's still playing the Seth character that he was previous to joining Paul. Like there's been no change. And I wasn't a fan of that Seth Rollins character either. So yeah, I don't know. It was a nice surprise. We'll see where it goes. And I mean, I think eventually, you know, would you say Seth will be the one to dethrone Jey Uso?
Oh, wow.
To give the group a little bit of credibility or,
yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. I hadn't thought that far ahead, but obviously, yeah, he's kind of the Ric Flair of the group, if you will. I mean, here I am comparing them to the Four Horsemen. So, you know, I don't know. I didn't really think about the end of Jey Uso's run. So I actually thought for a second there they were going to go with a Cena Uso unification match, but I'm like, God, don't do that because they just reestablished, or I guess a year or two ago, reestablished that belt. So,
anyway, just create a new title, and I mean, I think Cena should collect all the titles, including the women's.
Yes, have them come out there in AA's in Vega.
Yeah,
all the other women's champions, Tiffy Time. But yeah, it's an interesting time in wrestling, as always, and we'll continue to watch and some thoughts. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up this week's episode?
Let me think. I don't know. We got, as we record this, we have Double or Nothing tonight. So that should be a good show. Oh, well, I guess speaking, tying into AEW and WWE, they announced the next Saturday night's main event, which will be the same night as AEW's All In. Again, I think we talked about last time I was on the show. Is this pettiness from WWE? Is it just coincidental booking that, because the rumor was they were going to do the next Evolution, I think it's the all women's, but it's going to be Saturday night's main event and then Evolution pay-per-view or BLE on the Sunday night. So do you think because Saturday night's main event is on broadcast television that they decided to put that up against All In as a way to potentially steal viewers?
I thought All In moved to the afternoon.
Is it?
That's what Conrad said. So
okay. I don't know.
But I don't know.
That could be. Sure. Yeah. I mean, that might be. That sounds plausible. But again, I'm sure there'll be a little bit of overlap since AEW pay-per-views are like 12 hours long. Mm-hmm. So.
There's, 51 other Saturdays they could have done it. So I get it. I could see where there's some pettiness going on. I don't get it. I get that people see that. I don't get why it exists. But
well, and I guess and this isn't really petty, but the big news that broke this week as we record WrestleMania not in New Orleans, possibly coming back to Vegas. Rumors of Vegas becoming a regular spot for WrestleMania because that's where TKO is based out of. Your thoughts? Do you think? Back in the day, WCW always ran Starcade. They ran Starcade from the same place for like 3-4 years, and they would run Halloween Havoc at the MGM Grand in Vegas. And to me, I want to see it someplace new every year. And I think the fact that they've gone back to Orlando and New York and New Orleans so frequently in a short span of time is not that interesting.
I'd be curious to see the number of people who go multiple times. Mm-hmm. Because it's, I would say probably in the last 20 years, they've moved it to where it's more destination bound places. Mm-hmm. Where people want to maybe go on vacation or whatnot. And I can see where Vegas would be appealing to an extent, but I do think that I don't necessarily like the idea of Mania being that kind of residency style event. Like you said, Halloween Havoc had done it for a while, where I think people do save up and go to WrestleMania and make that their big thing every year. And so I could see where I would rather go to Orlando and move to Toronto or Los Angeles or whatever, than to save up and go to Vegas every year for the next handful of years. So I hope that they don't make it a regular thing, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do, just like you said.
And I believe the rumor is it'll be Easter weekend again. So do you?
Oh, they're moving the date too.
I mean, that's what I've read. I don't.
Wow. Well, I know Vegas, it's hurting, especially Easter weekend they've reported. So I wouldn't be, like they say, money talks. So we'll see what happens. Very interesting. What do you think?
I haven't been to Allegiant Stadium, but from what I saw this year, Mania, it looked too big. It just looked too wide for Mania. So I wasn't really impressed with the stadium itself. I don't know. Maybe it's because I can easily jet over to Vegas every weekend if I wanted to. Like, it's not a place that I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, it's, even though it's close, I'm like, oh, I would rather go someplace new and different. But also, I guess I want to go someplace where I can see things new, because I probably won't do all the wrestling events that are lined up for you know, for the weekend. So, but if I'm just going, if I was going just to do wrestling nonstop, then it really doesn't matter where it is. As long as the places are accessible and easy to get to.
Very well said. Well, friends, let us know your thoughts on the steel cage concepts, on the potential move for WrestleMania, the residents potentially in Las Vegas. Weigh in, let us know, leave your comments. And again, thanks for listening and or watching to this week's episode. And we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.